I know you're out there. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
Connecting the dots of the Constitution for you like no one else can. The Chris Ann Hall Show. American woman, listen what I say. She's an attorney, a disabled U.S. Army veteran, an author, public speaker, mother, pastor's wife, and a patriot. She's Chris Ann Hall.
Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Chris Ann Hall Daily Journal. Chris Ann Hall here, KRISANNEHALL.com, where we are always liberty over security, principle over party, and truth over your favorite personality. I have with me here today my husband and co-host, J.C. Hall.
Hello.
And the mystery is over, right?
Mm-hmm.
We now know who is President Trump's, I'll just go out and say it out there, first nomination for Supreme Court Justice.
Oh, you think there could be a second?
I think there could possibly be a second. I think that there could very well be a second. It wouldn't be unheard of.
Yeah, I don't think so.
No? Think George W. Bush had to go through three.
Yeah, I think he's going to make it through.
Yeah?
I do.
Well, that would be interesting. I think that would be, really interesting. I think that the whole confirmation hearing process is always very interesting, albeit frustrating for constitutionalists all across America to watch and sit through and suffer through.
I think the reality is this guy, as far as the issues that they are griping about, which which don't change. That means the same playbook all the time, but he's no different from. From Neil Gorsuch in those areas that they're griping about. So, what's her name? Collins and I think I said Snow last time. Snow retired. Collins and Murkowski, they voted to confirm Gorsuch. So why wouldn't they vote to confirm Kavanaugh? I think you're gonna hear pretty much the same answers as Gorsuch gave. I mean, they're not a lot different in most regards. So I really don't think there'd be that big of a deal. Honestly, I heard some of them talking about Rand Paul now being more opposed to the guy than Collins or Murkowski. So I don't know.
Well, you did say that you believe that they say that most of them, when under these confirmation hearings, will say what they think they need to say.
Right.
And that's sort of an interesting thing. I'm not real happy with that kind of understanding. I would hope that we would be able to have justices who are our future justices who are able to answer questions honestly and forthrightly. Is that proper use of that word or not? I don't know. But I mean, it's simple that we need to have people. The bottom line is that we don't have constitutional confirmation hearings. We have political circuses.
Yeah, and they know that. And so, but I think, I mean, Gorsuch to me, is, at least in regards to the abortion issue that is at the heart of apparently at their objections. I think he answered it rightly in the sense of he said basically that, look, I'm not going to decide cases before the cases are before me. I don't think you'll get much of a different answer from Kavanaugh than what you got from Gorsuch. Now, the only difference, these guys, a lot of the lefties are saying, at this point we want a straight, we need to make a demand to have a straight, direct statement that you will make sure that Roe v. Wade continues. I don't think you're going to get that out of any nominee. And like I said, the lefties' position is not really – that's not what's critical. What's critical are the two moderate Republicans,
right,
so-called, or
well,
pro-choice Republicans.
This
let's say.
Guy alone cannot – he cannot overturn Roe v. Wade.
No, of course
and he Roe v. Wade can't be overturned with this court because there are still five moderates who are going to follow precedent regardless.
Yeah, and it's – you know, that sort of thing – hinges on the cases that come before the court. And I mean, it's not like somebody's going to wake up tomorrow, okay, well, now we can overturn Roe v. Wade and there's going to be some suit. I mean, they can't just stand up and make a declaration.
Oh, no, but it sure makes a great political rallying cry, doesn't it?
But, you know, Gorsuch was, I mean, his basic answer was, hey, it's not my job to do your job in speaking
right.
to the Senate, and speaking to Congress,
right.
The legislature as a whole. It's not my job, do your job.
Right.
You know, so, and he's right. And I think that's what you're going to hear from Kavanaugh.
I did a Twitter poll,
mm-hmm.
and I asked, will this be a Senate hearing where members of the Senate actually ask constitutional questions, or will it be another circus of political division and juvenile bickering?
Yeah, it's going to be about politics.
Yeah, so 95% of the people polled said it's going to be a political circus. And yeah. Actually 5% believe that we could possibly have constitutional questions. And maybe 5% of the questions may be constitutional.
Yeah. I mean, you could have constitutional questions. That's probably not
going to be. But that won't
be
the encompassing of the entire hearing.
Right. That's not going to be the overall tenor of that. You know, but admittedly, you have more people in Congress now, particularly on the Senate Judiciary Committee, that are guys who are constitutionally focused and that would ask those questions. So I definitely think, you know, you could hear some. You have Tom Tillis from North Carolina. He's a guy I would expect you could hear that from. You have Mike Lee from Utah. You have Ted Cruz from Texas. John Cornyn from Texas. You know, those are guys that I would expect, or I can imagine, I could envision asking constitutionally relevant questions and constitutionally pointed questions. Jeff Flake, no, don't hold your breath. Lindsey Graham, don't hold your breath. Orrin Hatch, no. Chuck Grassley, not likely.
I don't think Lindsey Graham has ever done anything that hasn't been self-serving to begin with.
Lindsey Graham, I can hear, are you going to stop us from going to war if we want to go to war? That's what I want to know. I mean, that's kind of,
right,
you know, that's what
right,
he wants
right,
to know.
Right.
You know, I want to go to war with somebody.
You know, I was really pleased with Representative Tom Tillis today. I actually tweeted out to him that we were in the hotel lobby talking and watching Fox News, and Tom Tillis said, and I'm quoting now, we don't need an activist conservative justice any more than a liberal activist justice. And he said, we need SCOTUS to do their Article 3 job, not the job of Congress or the executive.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, seriously, that's what we need. I mean,
exactly.
That's what we've been saying. And it's really, really, it sort of gives me a little bit of hope to hear these guys actually repeating what we've been teaching for the last eight years.
It's nice to hear one of them say it, actually. Say
right,
it.
Exactly.
Yeah. He's right.
Yeah. And so I'm wondering, maybe are we trickling up that way? I mean, are we trickling up the line? And I think you have to believe that might be true, considering the population in itself is turning in that direction.
Well, I think I forgot to mention Ben Sasse from Nebraska. But, I mean, so you got five, you know, at least five guys there on the committee that, you know, you can hope would ask good questions.
But we need somebody that's simply going to just be forthright and come out and say, you know, I'm not answering these stupid questions. Who's that? Who's that basketball coach that always gets up there?
Greg Popovich.
Greg Popovich. Yeah, we need a Supreme Court justice like Greg Popovich.
Pull a pop on him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm done.
I'm
get
done.
Up and next
question.
Dianne Feinstein asks something stupid, and he just looks at her I think he should look at the. I don't know who's the committee chairman.
Yeah.
Just look at the chairman. And go next question.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Exactly.
But you know, when you ask, I mean, you take that poll.
You have to have the look too that goes with it. The sort of the invisible face palm sigh, roll your eyes and dip your chin and say next question.
And maybe a lot of listeners aren't basketball, professional basketball mm-hmm. fans out there. If you hadn't, you know, if you don't experience right. Greg Popovich's reaction at these press conferences, it's just classic. But, you know, when you put out the poll about what it's going to be, what they're going to ask. I mean, if you look at the minority members on the committee, you're talking Dianne Feinstein. You've got Cory Booker. I mean, you look at Dick Durbin. You look at the people that are there. I mean, you're going to get a bunch of political nonsense. There's no question about that.
Well, but the whole thing is just, it's simply based on hysteria. How many questions are going to be the Ted Kennedy speech on the House floor? When it comes to Bork. I mean, now we're being completely, any reasonable voice is being completely drowned out in the mainstream media by this liberal hysteria. You've got people marching in the streets. Women are going to die. And
I love it.
They're going to die and our world is over. And
I'm enjoying it. I think it's hilarious.
I think it's demeaning.
They're all Looney Tunes.
As a woman, I find it particularly demeaning.
No, but you want to know the second reason I like it? Because they present a teaching opportunity.
Yeah, that's true.
They put their idiocy on display, and then, you know, those with the information can counter. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think, like, when you see Michelle Wolf's, the other day, we were talking about Michelle Wolf and her I don't even know what you want to call it, her debaucherous comedy, and when she's on the July 4th, you know, not celebrating the independence of America, but the whole God bless abortion and all that sort of stuff, I think that presents a great opportunity. I think about, in our area in particular, you know, we've been in the church world for a long time, in ministry and missions and that sort of thing. Lots of friends in the church. In our area in the South, you know, so many people vote Democrat locally. They vote Republican nationally. And then the black community is, goodness, like over 90% Democrat. Mm-hmm. And we have so many friends in the black church, black ministers and fellow Christians. And we sit down and talk to them about what they believe, their moral stances, their values. And they do not match up with the Democrats, with these national Democrats, the Democrat National Party. And so I think something like Michelle Wolf's thing, people should print that out, like make a flyer out of that.
Hand it
in
a church.
Yeah, here is what the Democrat Party believes. Does this represent you? I mean, these things present teaching opportunities and opportunities to reach people that you wouldn't normally be able to reach.
Welcome back to the Chris Ann Hall Show. Chris Ann Hall here, KRISANNEHALL.com, and I'm with my husband and co-host, J.C. Hall. And we're talking about Brett Kavanaugh and the Supreme Court nomination. I want to read.
And the liberal hysteria.
And the liberal hysteria. There's an article in the New York Times written by a professor at Yale Law School named Akhil Reed Amar. And it's a liberal's case for Brett Kavanaugh. And, you know, I enjoyed the article from that sort of perspective. But there's one thing that I wanted to point out that he says here in this article. He says, Judge Kavanaugh, who is 53, has already helped decide hundreds of cases concerning a broad range of difficult issues. And this is the point that he makes. Good appellate judges faithfully follow the Supreme Court. Great ones influence and help steer it. Several of Judge Kavanaugh's most important ideas and arguments, such as his powerful defense of presidential authority to oversee federal bureaucrats and his skepticism about newfangled attacks on the property rights of criminal defendants, have found their way into Supreme Court opinions. And if this is the nature of who Kavanaugh is, then I would be very excited. You know, I'm never going to jump on board until we judge a person by their actions, right?
Sure.
And I want to see what happens when he gets up there. But what this tells me is that Kavanaugh is a guy who is not married to precedent. And I'm really kind of pleased to see this liberal Yale law professor admit that he thinks it's a great thing to not be married to precedent. And so when we're dealing with questions at the judicial, at the nomination hearing, the Senate nomination hearing, one of those questions ought to be, what is your dedication to precedent?
Yeah.
Because
that is going to be a question.
But the right answer would be no more than my dedication to the Constitution. Right? Because my dedication to the Constitution comes before precedent.
I would say, you know, if I were in his position, this is what I always see, like, they don't have the boldness to sort of push back because they're always in the mindset of saying what they think needs to be said. I would be like straight up. Which precedent are you referring to? Would you be referring to the Dred Scott precedent? I mean, there are so many precedents that you could name.
Right. How about the precedent of Kirimatsu v. U.S.?
The Japanese internment
camps.
It's just the matter. What's implied in the question is that precedent is unquestionable.
Right. And that's the point.
And so, there's an expectation that they're going to say, we'll follow precedent. But precedent has been overturned. I mean, that's part of what the Supreme Court has to do. When a court makes a mistake and doesn't follow the Constitution, then the court has to be able to look at that and compare it to the Constitution and say, that doesn't line up with the Constitution. It's our mm-hmm. job to follow the Constitution. Therefore, we can't follow that.
Right. And that's the problem that I have with this following precedent as a matter of tradition, as a matter of law.
Yeah.
And this idea, and I think, who was it that we were reading the other day in a Supreme Court opinion where they said that Supreme Court or that federal judges should always follow the Supreme Court? Mm-hmm. I don't remember which justice. It was a justice sitting on the court right now. That federal judges really have no other choice. They have to follow Supreme Court opinions.
Right, which means Barack Obama would still be a piece of property.
Right, exactly.
If you follow precedent.
Right. And so it's absolutely insane, not to mention the fact that the Korematsu v. U.S., the Japanese internment case, that the Supreme Court, in their opinion, declared was constitutional. See, this is what gets me with all these.
Which means, therefore, we can not just separate Mexican families, like children from their mm-hmm. families, we can just round up all Mexicans because they're Mexicans and put them in internment camps.
Right.
That's what following precedent means.
That's
insane.
But see, Korematsu's never been overturned by the Supreme Court. It's still standing opinion. And when we come back after the break, I want to talk about this because this is a very, very important issue that we need to discuss because this will dictate the future of any Supreme Court in the United States.
There again, men tear up our Constitution, and from every direction we cry revolution. Standing together and without permission, soldiers for truth in the war of attrition, the love of our country as our.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Oh, but I'm only a stranger here. I'm a long, long way from my home. And I'm going to change all the things I find strange. For I am not one man.
Welcome back to the Chris Ann Hall Show. Chris Ann Hall here. I'm with my husband and co-host J.C. Hall, and this hysteria surrounding the nomination of a Supreme Court justice. And I think that one of the scariest things that those who do not know better, who are listening and learning from the media mantra, from the liberal mantra, is this term original intent.
Right.
It terrifies them.
Yeah.
Because first off, we've been teaching the wrong things for a very long time. And secondly, people don't realize how tyrannical our Supreme Court has already been. And the difference between an activist judge and an original intent judge is huge.
Original intent to the lefty snowflake means Jim Crow laws, chattel slavery, misogyny, oppression of women, removing voting rights from women. That's pretty much what that means. And they even have the idea of sort of the moral laws of the Massachusetts Bay Colony, of just the church rolling through with a steamroller and dressing everybody up in ankle-length gowns and, you know, tying your ankles together or whatever. So it's a complete distortion, but that's one of the techniques that sees the language. So
right.
I think the article that you just published regarding the original intent is fantastic article if people want real history and be able to answer these issues and educate people. I think it's a good one. You wrote one called The Safeguard for the Supreme Court.
Yeah, and basically it's the historical factual outline of why original intent is actually the freeing of the slaves. Original intent is actually liberty for all, and it's the history of the Supreme Court to be contrary to that.
Right.
And what really, really bothers me when people look at these Supreme Court cases, some of them I outline in this article, the Supreme Court, every time they go contrary to the liberty of the people, with Dred Scott, we've got Korematsu, we've got the eminent domain case, Kelo v. Mm-hmm. City of New London, they always say these words, the Constitution says.
Right.
The Constitution declares.
When it was the court that said.
It is not the Constitution, though. It is the interpretation.
Right.
And they don't actually say, we interpret the Constitution to say that.
Right.
They actually boldly come out and say, the Constitution says that. And in this article,
You deal with the Dred Scott
case. I deal with the Dred Scott case at the heart of it.
Which is not, as you say in the article, not a case, not an example of original intent. If you look at it, you understand it's an example of judicial activism. Because
and bigotry and racism.
Right,
and
because the court, it's not the court just took the plain reading of the text and pointed to something in the text that said this. They were saying things the Constitution said that was not in the text, and they were ignoring history. They were ignoring their present history. They ignored the founders' words. And so your point in the article is that the safeguard, a judge who is an original intent judge should be a safeguard against racism. But they're teaching that, no, original intent means racism, and the history doesn't. That's not what the history supports.
Well, and that's where we get off the track, because we have this, for the last 150 years, we've raised the Supreme Court justices to the level of deity, mm-hmm. that they cannot be questioned, that we ought not question their wisdom and judgment.
Independence.
Their independence.
They call it part of being an independent judiciary. Therefore, nobody can check them. Nobody can question them.
But it's in decisions like this where they actually claim they are quoting the Constitution, mm-hmm. where they actually claim the Constitution says that people get their history.
Mm-hmm.
Law students get their history. So they believe this is actually what the foundation of America was because the Supreme Court justice says that. Let me mention to you some things in this case, because like you said, Dred Scott v. U.S. is not an example of original intent but of judicial activism. And it is through this opinion that they list these series of historical errors, ignorance, I mean total fabrications. You have to look at this and think, where in the world did they get this history, right? Because in reality, it doesn't exist. They just made this stuff up. In the judicial summary, the court claimed, quote, the only two clauses in the Constitution which point to this race, treat them as persons whom is it was morally lawfully to deal in as articles of property and to hold as slaves. Okay, there are no clauses in the Constitution that mention any race.
Right.
Much less the African race.
Mm-hmm.
But look at this. The clauses in the Constitution which point to this race.
Yeah.
And that's why people believe that the Constitution called black men property. Because we've got a bunch of ignoramuses sitting on the bench declaring it to be factual truth. Here's the irony. This text that they're talking about, there are two clauses. They reference two groups of people. People that are other than freemen, and then persons held to service or labor. Now, this does not apply simply and just to the African race. This could equally apply to over 300 English, Irish, and Scottish slaves brought into the American colonies. 300? Between 300,000.
Oh, okay.
Did I forget the thousand part? 300,000 English, Scottish, Irish slaves brought into the American colonies from 1618 to 1775. But you don't hear any of our Supreme Court justices, you don't hear any law professors try to assert that an Irishman, a Scotsman, or a poor white English slave would not be a citizen if freed, or their children born free would not be citizens. Why is it then that we have this understanding in the academic elite that the Constitution singled out African slaves and said they could not be citizens? This is because we have people being taught by this stuff.
Right.
It makes no sense. Another thing that the court in Dred Scott claims it's not in the Constitution. Quote, a free Negro of the African race whose ancestors were brought to this country and sold as slaves is not a citizen within the meaning of the Constitution of the United States. Not in the Constitution and not factually true. Think, you longtime listeners, and you know, people who've had my class, Crispus Attucks.
Right.
James Fortin, George Middleton. James Fortin was born a free man. He went into the Navy. Do you know he became an incredibly wealthy entrepreneur after serving in the American Navy during our war for independence?
Yeah.
George Middleton created a benevolent society called the African Benevolent Society, a nonprofit organization created to help widows and children who were slaves, widows and children of the black men who fought in our Revolutionary War, who were free men. To fight for our liberty meant that you were a free man. And it's just, how many people do you think understand that the first legal case about slavery in Great Britain, prior to the creation of America, was a black citizen of the British government, a black property owner, and a black slave owner?
Don't give away the whole article. Make them go read it.
I will make them go read it. But it's just, it's just...
But I think that...
It's frustrating to me because you just go to the internet and look this stuff up.
Right.
These people are intentionally deceiving.
Well, like I said before, what I think is disgraceful about it is, you know, these folks that claim to we're fighting for equality and we're fighting against racial injustice, they don't celebrate these people.
No.
These were prominent minorities in our founding, our founders' history. So if you like James Fortin as an example, as you said, born free, 1766 in Philadelphia.
Born free.
Okay.
That was pretty much before the Emancipation Proclamation, I guess.
Became a sailmaker after the Revolutionary War. And after his apprenticeship, he became the foreman at the business. The owner of the business retired, and he bought some of his equipment and then began basically inventing his own equipment and different types of stuff, became a very wealthy businessman in Philadelphia. This is a black American businessman in America. So that to have that kind of story, the fact that he existed, the fact there's a free, black, wealthy businessman, he's not selling sales just to black people,
mm-mm,
right?
Mm-mm.
So that story, the fact that this story exists, this guy exists, in 1776, 1778, all this time after revolution when he's successful. This contradicts the narrative that they want to promote. That's why you don't hear stories about Crispus Attucks from these folks, about James Fortin. Or if you do, it's some sort of very shallow, very cursory thing.
Or a revision.
They don't want to go into details because they don't want a picture of successful free minorities, before the 1960s or whatever. There has to be this vision of every white person in America was racist. America was founded on racism. America was built by racism and enslaved people. And, therefore the Constitution is invalid. Everything America stands for is invalid. And we need to overturn it, reinvent it, reshape it, make it something new, which what they prefer is this new Marxist socialist
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
This is our final segment of the Chris Ann Hall Daily Journal. Remember, go to chrisannhall.com and you can listen to all the shows, Chris Ann Hall Weekly Show and the Chris Ann Hall Daily Journal that runs Monday through Thursday. And, I just want to remind you, go to chrisannhall.com. Get the article Safeguard for the Supreme Court. Share it on your social media. Why don't you print it out and hand it out to people in your community? We've got to be activists in defeating this bigotry and these lies about who we are as Americans and what original intent actually means. This article will help you. Remember, if you're a student at Liberty First University, you can go through all our courses that will help you become a professor. And I don't mean that in the sense of the word like you're going to go to university and teach. I mean a professor, one who professes the truth about who we are, our Constitution, and the foundation of America. LibertyFirstUniversity.com. We actually have a course at Liberty First University that JC and I teach together called Slavery and the American Founders. You want to shut down these liberal bigots and their attack on the Constitution, which is full of lies and fabrications. The course, Slavery and the American Founders, will help you do that. Also, the Forgotten Founders course that I teach. Both of them, by the way, are available on DVD. If you are not a member of Liberty First University, you can buy those DVDs individually. But remember, for the price of one DVD, you can have unlimited access to all the courses at Liberty First University. Not to mention the courses that we have and the courses that we will be adding. For the price of one DVD, you can have unlimited, an entire month's limited access to Liberty First University. And if you have a student in your house, there's even a reduced rate at Liberty First University for those of you who have students in your household, just as a way for us to help encourage bringing truthful education into the houses of education. You know, honey, we've had lots of requests on social media for specific shows. People want us to do a show dedicated to what kind of questions should they ask. I've even had several requests for a show about my transformation from a socialist to a constitutionalist. And I think those are good ideas. And I like the fact that people are chiming in, you know, and telling us, giving us our input about those kind of things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Super. Awesome. Keep writing us. Keep giving us your input. Because we want us this show to be not just simply what you see, but what you need.
Right.
We want to be this for you, to give you the information that you need. Oh, we almost totally forgot. President Donald Trump pardoned the Hammonds today.
Yeah.
I mean, why? I am so ashamed of myself. How could I not remember that? He pardoned the Hammonds in Oregon. Those of you who remember that case, the Hammonds were prosecuted by the Bureau of Land Management for a fire on their own land and that accidentally burned some other things and put them in prison for 5 years for a fire. Mm-hmm. By the way, a fire that was more under control than most of the Bureau of Land Management controlled burns that they have. And I'm so grateful to see President Trump do this. I want to read to you a section from President Trump's pardon, or at least the press release from the pardon. You can go to Facebook, you can go to Twitter to see the whole link, but this is a statement from the press secretary regarding executive clemency for Dwight and Stephen Hammond. And this is just a portion of it. It says, "The previous administration, however, filed an overzealous appeal that resulted in the Hammonds being sentenced to 5 years in prison. This is unjust." He says, "Justice is overdue for Dwight and Stephen Hammond, both of whom are entirely deserving of these grants of executive clemency." I just want to say, welcome home to the Hammonds. Praise God, and liberty has a victory today. God bless you guys. We will see you again tomorrow. I was one.